This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also download over at our website at progressive.org. I'm pleased to have in the studio with me David Broder, columnist for The Washington Post and Pulitzer Prize winner. David Broder, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm going to put you on the spot right away. Who do you think is going to win this election?
Well, I don't really know. I think Obama ought to win. The country wants to have a real change, but he happens to have drawn a very tough opponent in John McCain, and the Republicans certainly came out of their convention last week with a lot of energy and momentum, which they had not had before that.
Why do you think McCain is such a good candidate? He almost imploded right before the Republican primaries, early on in that campaign.
Well, he was, all of us thought he was dead a year ago, and then he, happily for him, there is a state called New Hampshire where he has had a kind of special relationship for a long time, and he simply went back to New Hampshire and started talking to people again and reminded them why they had liked him so much. I think he had a less formidable field than Obama faced, and I don't think his victory was all that surprising. I probably was less surprised by it than some other reporters because I'd been through the 2000 campaign, and I knew that when he really starts clicking, he is a very good face-to-face campaigner.
Yeah, I always thought he was going to get it, so I was actually surprised when he seemed to crash and burn. But then he came back like Lazarus here. Obama, you said, had a harder field. Were you surprised that he triumphed?
I was surprised until I started going around with him in Iowa. And his lucky break, I think, was that Iowa was the first contest. Iowa is a lot like Illinois. He had run a very tough Senate primary in Illinois, and they basically reran that exact same campaign in Iowa, including putting him out all summer of 2007 in the small towns and rural areas without much coverage where he could really work on his basic speech. And he turned that basic speech into something that was a work of beauty.
My surprise in Iowa, and I was only there on caucus day, was how poorly John Edwards did, because John Edwards, even more so than Obama, was living in Iowa for the 3 years leading up to the caucuses. Why do you think he didn't take fire even before the scandal that we don't need to go into?
This sounds like retrospective wisdom, but I never thought that Edwards was as convincing the second time around as he had been the first time. In 2004, I thought, and I've said to people, that John Edwards was far and away the best campaigner out there. And if Raleigh, North Carolina, produced as many smart, experienced political operatives as Boston, Massachusetts does, I think Edwards would have won the nomination. But Kerry just buried him with having all of those smart, experienced Massachusetts guys just in every small town in Iowa, and they carried Iowa for Kerry. And as you know, that was the end of the game.
This time, what about Hillary Clinton? Why do you think she didn't quite make it?
That's a harder question for me to answer because for some reason she was not at the top of her game in Iowa. I think by the end of the campaign she was doing as well with voters as anybody, and maybe even better than Obama was doing at the end of the primaries. But she was not that comfortable for reasons that I don't think I really understand in Iowa. But I was not surprised that she ended up being beaten by the two guys in Iowa.
David Broder, tell me whether you think Obama made a mistake not choosing Hillary Clinton as vice president.
No, I don't think that was a mistake. I don't know what in the world he would have done if he'd won and had Bill Clinton as part of his entourage for the next 4 years. I just don't think that was workable. I mean, there, you know, we sometimes overcomplicate politics, and personal chemistry really is important. I never believed for a moment that John McCain would pick Mitt Romney as his running mate, because I'd heard John McCain talk in off-guard moments about how he had sized up Romney's character. And I didn't think he was going to sentence himself to look at that face for the next 4 years.
How did he size up that character?
Not in very flattering ways. John McCain doesn't dislike a lot of politicians, but he came to have a fair degree of contempt for Mitt Romney. And I never thought that Barack Obama, if he pulled it off, was going to share it with the Clintons. It would have been extraordinarily generous to put my way of him to do that.
But here, McCain has kind of pulled a fast one by choosing Sarah Palin, and that may not have been something that he would have done, or if he had done it with Hillary on the ticket, it wouldn't have had quite as much of significance, don't you think?
Well, it would have been different, obviously, if both the vice presidential candidates had been women. I don't think we can judge the Palin choice as you and I are talking today, because there's so much we don't know about her. And I'm just kind of reserving judgment on that one, whether it was brilliant or a mistake.
What was your initial gut reaction when you heard the choice?
I'm sorry.
When you heard your initial gut reaction when you heard it, I didn't even know who she was. But
my initial reaction was I was kicking myself, because I have gone, I think, to every governor's conference since she's been in the governorship, and I've never had a conversation with her, which shows how dumb my political instincts are.
Now, you said McCain has contempt for Romney. Does he also have contempt for Obama, do you think?
He's not as high on Obama as I would have thought. They had a couple of brushes in the Senate where McCain thought that Obama had committed to do something that he ended up not doing. One was about the immigration bill. One was about the ethics bill that the Senate passed early on in 2007, he did not come away with a good impression about Obama. I think Obama is quite respectful of McCain's life, but certainly not of his opinions.
If you were consulting for Obama, what would you recommend he do?
I would not recommend what he do. The worst advice I've ever heard is the advice that political reporters give to candidates. You know, so many of my colleagues think that they're smarter than the campaign managers, and I could cite you chapter and verse of really stupid advice from the press.
David Broder, you in years past have done a lot of reporting at the grassroots to gauge the opinions of citizens and to get a feel that's a little deeper and more probing than you get just reading poll statistics. My question is, are you doing it this year? And if so, what are you finding?
Well, I've started doing it this year. I did a lot in the primaries, but the week before the Democratic convention started in Denver, I went back up to New Hampshire because I was particularly interested in trying to get a sense at the ground level of how deep the rift was between the Clinton people and the Obama people. I found some real evidence of tension inside Governor Gene Shaheen's Senate campaign. They have had real trouble enlisting the Obama supporters in that campaign because she and her husband were identified as Clinton people. But when I went out and talked with the voters about the presidential race, I found that almost all of Clinton's supporters had moved already to backing Obama. And this was before the Democratic convention, when both Hillary and Bill Clinton made those, I thought, very generous speeches in support of Obama.
New Hampshire is a swing state. Do you have a sense as to which way it's swing?
New Hampshire presidential race?
Mm-hmm.
It'll be very close. I mean, McCain really does have something special going with in New Hampshire. That state, it's not really his home state. I guess you'd say Arizona is, though. He didn't move to Arizona till his second marriage. But it reminds me a little bit of what people used to say about Bill Clinton, that Bill Clinton was really a Californian, but Stork had gotten confused and dropped him off by mistake in Arkansas. But when you saw Clinton campaigning in California, he was so much one of them. And McCain is that way in New Hampshire.
What other states do you think are key right now or will be key on November 4th?
Well, my home state of Virginia is key, which we can hardly stand because we're not used to that. But it really is a battleground now. I think New Hampshire will be again. Ohio always is. Colorado, from what I heard during the Democratic convention, will be a real battleground this time. Nevada, I think if we know who wins three of those states, we probably know who wins the election.
I was in an airplane after the Democratic convention, which I didn't attend, by the way, but I was going east from Chicago, and there was a woman who was an African-American 65-year-old woman who for 2 weeks had been working on the Obama campaign in Denver for the convention, and she said the state that concerns her most right now is Pennsylvania. If Obama loses Pennsylvania, it seems to me that he'd be lost. Do you have a sense what's going on there?
I think he's got a lot of work to do, but Joe Biden helps him a lot in Pennsylvania. I mean, Biden, as the Philadelphians will tell you, has really been like the third senator from Pennsylvania. And I think particularly in the Scranton area, which is Biden's home area, where Obama got clobbered by Clinton in the primary. I'd be very surprised in the end if Obama and Biden don't carry Pennsylvania.
David Broder, what is your assessment of Joe Biden?
Well, I'm a fan, I should say that, and largely because I do not fancy myself at all an expert on foreign policy, and he's one of the people that you can go to in Washington asking questions, and he will actually lay it out for you very clearly. I think he's been about as right on Iraq as anybody that I know.
Except he was in favor of it at the beginning.
Well, I don't regard that personally as a impossible position to justify, given what the information that was circulating in Washington at that point. But he certainly understood much more than apparently the people in the Pentagon did about what that society was, the three groups and the geographical and ethnic difficulties among them. And I think has been consistently a good, solid voice on on foreign policy. And he, the part of his life that people don't know nearly as much about, when he was chairman of judiciary, he was about as helpful to the cities of this country as any legislator in Washington.
So?
Anti-crime legislation and all of the basic housing legislation that wasn't his jurisdiction, but he really worked on it because his home city of Wilmington is as much as any city in the country dependent on federal programs.
What's your assessment of Bush here toward the end? He's been in there 7.5 years. He is not popular.
No, you might say that. I misjudged him so badly at the start. I'm kind of nervous about trying to make any retrospective judgments. I thought that he would be a very routine president. I mean, I confess to you that in the 2000 election, I thought we had one candidate who was slightly to the left of center and one who was slightly to the right of center, but I didn't think either Al Gore or George Bush was really going to come in and upset the apple cart. Well, he turned out to be much more radical in the classic sense of the word than I ever imagined him to be. And on the big things, the constitutional things and the foreign policy things, I think he's been a terribly negative influence on the country. And he's leaving his successor, whoever it is, with about as tough an agenda of repair work as any president ever has.
Do you have second thoughts on your original view of Cheney as vice president, too? What happened to Cheney? Or was Cheney always like this, but
well,
in disguise?
That's, I think, beyond my pay grade. A lot of the people who knew Dick Cheney much better than I did, and I've known him since he was a young congressional staff guy working for Bill Steiger from this state of Wisconsin. And I thought I knew Dick pretty well, but I certainly share the puzzlement that a lot of other Republicans feel about him, that he became a much more doctrinaire, dogmatic, hardline kind of person, not just in terms of his policy, but in terms of personality, than the person that they had known for many years.
No, I'm one of those people who, for the last couple of years, has been advocating impeachment of Bush and Cheney because of the lies in the Iraq War and some of the things they've done with the Judiciary Committee and the FISA, with the Justice Department and the FISA illegal spying on people. You're not in favor of impeachment, I take it, or are you?
No.
Can you explain why?
Well, because this is a country that's in the middle of two unsettled wars that has really seriously growing and unattended problems here at home. I think that the judgment that the people have made about the Bush-Cheney administration could not be clearer. And I rather expect that that judgment is going to be, if not the factor, certainly a large factor in this election. I'd rather settle this matter through the ballot box than through the impeachment process.
Yeah, I was just thinking that you mentioned the constitutional things that they've so adversely affected. I just think it's important just constitutionally to lay down a marker to say there shouldn't be this kind of malfeasance in office as regards the Constitution and the laws. And it may be that there's no accountability ultimately, and that McCain is certainly not running as an heir to George Bush.
Well, he's not running as an, and he's not an heir to George. I mean, I think those of us who've covered John McCain over the years know that this is a very different personality. You may or may not like what you get with John McCain, but it's not going to be second Bush administration.
So this strategy of the Obama campaign, to call it the Bush-McCain years or the Bush-McCain foreign policy or the Bush-McCain economic policy, you think is not a good one, or not an accurate one anyway?
It's not accurate, and I don't think it's terribly persuasive, and it's certainly become repetitious.
Now, Obama has been talking a lot about change, David Broder. Now McCain is talking about change. Is there a percentage there, or do they need to talk about something more substantive?
Well, no. I mean, and credit that to the people, because what's happened is essentially both of these candidates have been out talking to voters now for the last 18 months. And what they have heard from the voters is a demand, not that Democrats change or Republicans change, but that Washington change. People are pretty fed up with what they are seeing from their nation's capital. And it's not a surprise that both these candidates have gotten that message, because if you talk to voters anywhere in this country, that is the message that they really want to deliver.
David Broder, why does Congress have such a low approval rating? I mean, it's in the single digits, according to some polls.
Well, think about the things that are really on people's minds. The economy is changing, and changing so fast we can hardly grasp the changes. But it's also just upsetting people's lives and expectations all across the country. The healthcare system, on which people depend for something pretty basic, is a dysfunctional system. That's what Donna Shalala called it 12 years ago, and it's not gotten any better. The transportation system in this country, the infrastructure, if you will, is breaking down. And we are locked into two wars that we don't seem to be able to bring to an end. Energy is out of our control and is causing huge problems now in this country. When you ask what has Congress done about any one of those issues, the answer is not very much. So why wouldn't people be fed up with performance of Congress?
I know a lot of people on the progressive side are kind of fed up with Nancy Pelosi, because she didn't stop funding for the war, and people thought she was elected to do that, and she wasn't for impeachment, for instance, saying that was off the table. How do you evaluate her as Speaker?
Well, I have a bias because I like Nancy Pelosi, but I don't think you could possibly argue that this has been a successful speakership because of all of the things that haven't happened.
And Harry Reid?
I don't have any bias on that case. I just think he's one of the weakest leaders that I've ever seen in the Senate. It's impossible to imagine in the Senate of the past that if they took up the issue of immigration, which is another fundamental broken system, that if they took up that issue, that the United States Senate would fail to act on the issue once they had put it on its agenda. It simply would not have happened under any previous majority leader that you'd let two backbench Republicans, in effect, kidnap the United States Senate and keep the country from addressing that kind of fundamental issue.
David Broder, Ted Kennedy's very ill right now. Do you want to give some assessment as to his career as a senator?
Well, he's been a magnificent senator. He's has done everything that a senator can do in terms of raising issues and working issues, and has probably more achievements to his credit than anybody else now serving.
One thing, you seem to like politicians in general. You seem to have a bias in favor of the two-party system. I don't know if that's fair. Correct me if it isn't. What do you make of the third-party candidates right now, Ralph Nader, Cynthia McKinney in the Greens, or Bob Barr?
I think they are on the edge of irrelevancy this year, because I do think that there is a lot of not just interest but excitement about both of the major party nominees. And as we get into this campaign, I think that the issues between them will become clearer and clearer to people. So I don't see that there's going to be much room for or need for additional options for voters this time around.
One of the crucial issues that the country has faced forever, and I don't think that's an exaggeration, is the question of racism. What effect do you think racism is going to have ultimately on this election? Or put it this way, do you think a sufficient number of white Americans will be willing to pull the lever for a black guy?
I think in the case of Barack Obama, that that will not in itself be a decisive issue. I hope I'm not kidding myself about that. But my home state of Illinois has parts of it that are probably as inclined to look askance at a black man running for major office as any parts of the country. And Obama largely diffused that when he was running for the Senate in Illinois. And I think he has a personality and a, I would say more than just personality, a life that really minimizes that kind of anti-black racism. I hope I'm not wrong about that.
I hope so, too. I remember seeing a New York Times poll that said 19% of white Americans said they didn't think their white friends would be comfortable voting for an African-American for president.
But that's in the abstract, and we're not dealing now with an abstract. We're dealing with two very real people. And by the way, I do think that with McCain, you will not have any sneaky, racist, disguised appeals from the Republican campaign.
But there may be from third party 527s or Republican apparatchiks, possibly.
Well, this is where there's a real trade-off. I mean, I'm a two-party person. I think that we've been fortunate to have a two-party system in this country. But I have to say that when it comes to campaign time, I do think that people have and ought to be able to exercise their right to say what they want to say as individuals. And I'm not interested in any kind of regime that would say you're not allowed to say that during the course of the campaign.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm not either. I just think,
think
that freedom, there may be some ugliness, too.
Right.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. David Broder, columnist for The Washington Post, thanks so much for being my guest.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.